for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Nick Mandola here on WBNY 91.3, along with Ben Tsujimoto from the Buffalo News soccer blog on another crazy weekend in the English Premier League, amongst other things that we will get to today. Major League Soccer has its first ever free agent signing, which is kind of neat to see. The All-West New York High School dinner tomorrow night at Classics 5. We'll be excited to talk about that a bit. Just really a lot of things going on across the world of soccer, but it's very difficult to start anywhere else but King Power Stadium in Leicester in the United Kingdom, where the Foxes, led by Claudio Ranieri and his wizard of passing, known as Riyad Mahrez,
The Algerian Messi,
have knocked off Chelsea, meaning that in the 14 to 19 spots of the Premier League table, you have Sunderland, Norwich, Swansea, Bournemouth, Newcastle, and Chelsea. Chelsea literally a Norwich or Swansea win away from being in the relegation zone. And it's hard to know. We dwell on the negatives, and bashing Jose Mourinho is certainly something that people like to do. But how do you start there when Leicester City remains first on the table? I mean, pick your poison, Ben. I'll leave it in the choice in your able mouth, able mind.
Thank you, Nick.
And able hands. Suge, where are we here? What's more compelling, Leicester atop the table or Chelsea in 16th?
Leicester, you know, because it's positive, I think, without a doubt. 16 games, only one loss for the Foxes. Claudio Ranieri going against a team that he used to manage before Jose Mourinho took over the first time. And there's so many great stories with Leicester. You know, not only are they the Cinderella story, and it's funny because when you look at the EPL, it's not like there's a playoff system, right? So you have to find your Cinderellas during the regular season. And it's different here than it is in a lot of other sports. The Jamie Vardy story is nice. Obviously, another very nice goal today. But Riyad Mahrez is just trying to tug that spotlight away from Vardy, you know. And he's getting interest from Barcelona. He's getting interest from all sorts of places now. And it's what I want to talk about, at least from the Leicester standpoint, is what do you do when your two best players are at their peak right now? I don't think Vardy or Mahrez will ever be better or ever be more positively looked upon than they are right now. And if you're Leicester, do you capitalize on that value during this January window? And what does that say to the fans of the Foxes, the supporters? And if Leicester, there has to be a belief that Leicester is still, at least among the club, that they're going to be a Champions League team.
My guess, Ben, is that what we've seen from Leicester is, and this is not the reason they're top of the table. Well, it's the reason they're top of the table. It's not the reason they're succeeding, because you can't throw away only losing one game regardless of who's on the schedule, especially at a mirror point last year. You were basically left for dead. Consider that you'd be relegated. But they have yet to embark on a murderer's row. And here's what I think. They are pretty much safe. 40 points is the amount of points you want to get to assume you'll be safe. Mm-hmm. In the battle against relegation. And at Leicester City side, even with that start, obviously they're not going down this year. They have a three-game stretch here that I think will decide who they sell and whether they sell. Because so far this year, we've seen them draw Manchester United at home. We've seen them draw Spurs and now beat Chelsea. But coming up on the 19th, which is Saturday, they will go to Goodison Park to face Everton. Then they go on Boxing Day to face Liverpool. Both two Merseyside trips there before Man City comes on December 29th. And I think if they get 5 points out of that, a win and two draws, or it's a slim loss and a win and a draw. You know, those are three very good teams. I believe they'll probably hang on to those players because you're trying to make a statement. You're trying to stick in the Premier League top half of the table, something we saw Southampton do last year. And that, I think, helped them so much in the summer to prove that they weren't just a fantastic run. It wasn't just one run. So if you lose those three games or just pick up a couple of ties and you see yourself in fourth, You know you're safe. You know you can invest that money right away. And surely who's ever in charge of player talent there, Ben, has lined up guys who say, all right, look, if we do sell Mahrez, if we do sell Vardy, this is where we scoop it up. These are who we scoop up to make the move happen. Then I think you sell. Mahrez is going to fetch a lot of money on the market.
More than Vardy.
More than Vardy, just simply because of age. And Vardy will have seen what happened with Charlie Austin last year, who is still at QPR, and I think he might see his head turned a little bit if they don't thrive. However, if they pick up 6 points, 5 points, 6 points, dare we say 9 points, which is not, I mean, I think it's safe to say it's not going to happen. You'd have to win at Everton and at Liverpool and then knock off City within a span of 10 days. And those teams have the depth to do it. Leicester doesn't have the depth to do that. If you can do that, then go for it. It's hard to argue not going for it. To still be in the top four mix. And considering, I haven't looked at who Man City or Man U or Arsenal play moving forward, but watching Tottenham just basically puke over the last three fixtures, losing to Newcastle, drawing one of the newly promoted sides, I want to say. Palace is in sixth. It's the world of Premier League money.
It's really bizarre, Nick. It is super bizarre. And looking at those three matches ahead that you just mentioned for Leicester City, I mean, Liverpool seems very vulnerable right now. People are starting to wonder with Klopp. You know, I mean, they were very lucky to draw against Newcastle this weekend. And
no, draw against West Brom. They lost to Newcastle. Which is worse.
Yes. And I think Liverpool is very vulnerable, as you just supported with that. And City without Aguero, Yaya Toure may be looking at leaving in whether it's January or in the summer. That team's in a time of transition as well. So I don't think those eight clubs that you ordinarily think of as these are going to be the teams that in some order finish 1 through 8. I don't think that's really the status quo anymore.
And Arsenal is facing a incredible run of injuries as well. Hmm. Otherwise, you would kind of tip them, right? You'd say this is the year they break through.
I still kind of think they're the favorites. I don't think they're deep. Giroud has found his form. Their defense seems like it's better than ever. Hector Bellerin is, I think, a huge addition. When everybody thought it was going to be Debuchy, and it ends up being Bellerin and Nacho Monreal. You know, it's. I think Arsenal and Petr Cech is. It's funny that I saw a funny meme today of Petr Cech and his headgear eventually morphing into Darth Vader, which is kind of appropriate given this week. But if I encourage anybody just to search Petr Cech on Twitter, I'm sure you'll see it, because Cech tweeted it out himself.
Yeah, I do think Arsenal.
How are we spelling that? Because I want to look at it right
C-E-C-H.
now.
Yep, C-E-C-H.
Drop the Z. Drop the Z. Going back to the River Dogs. But I'm sitting here thinking to myself that Arsenal, their title hopes, I think, took a hit, although so did their European hopes with the draw today in the Champions League. I think they would have had the inside track were they only playing FA Cup and Premier League the rest of the way. But moving on and having that congested schedule the same time that Manchester City does is very, very interesting. City, to me, David Silva is it. For me, he's a fantastic player, and I saw a great stat over the weekend that Jesus Navas has tied for the most assists with Silva or Yaya, I can't remember, on Manchester City over the last two seasons. So
think how good Navas could be if he could cross the ball.
Well, no, seriously.
I know, I'm not joking.
These players are, and Yaya with that thumping goal late. So I think one of the things that challenges Leicester and challenges all teams is with a wide open race like this. A lot of players don't go on the market in January. They don't become available. And now the competition for them is going to drive the price up. So it'll be interesting to see who does move and where the moves get made. I saw Newcastle tab for like four moves the other day. And that's when you know you're hitting silly season, because moves just don't happen that much in January.
But people love to read about them regardless.
Oh, yeah.
And I see just looking at NBC Sports.
Oh, yeah. We have to do a transfer gossip roundup every day. And people always ask, well, why are you doing these in December? Because everyone clicks.
And it's very interesting, you know, just seeing names, especially from other leagues rumored to go to the EPL, and thinking about how those players' inclusion would change the complexion of the league itself.
Even Kamar
really
Lawrence from the New York Red Bulls. I mean, there are a lot of players. Who is the MLS player who was recently? Matt Miazga.
Yeah, Miazga.
From Red Bulls, which would be an interesting move. And who was the last one that was discussed? Darlington Nagbe's been discussed.
Yeah, and Jorge Villafana, right after Portland wins, goes over to Santos in Liga MX. So there are MLS players who could very well move, and I think some of them, especially looking at Giovinco's success and seeing what his next step might be, I think at least other leagues are having a closer eye on MLS. I still don't think it's a talent-producing machine for across the pond or anything
Well,
like that.
And you know what? I think we'll have to transition at some point into talking. I haven't even brought this up with you, but I know you'll be able to talk about it. The U.S. men's national team.
Oh, yeah.
The male player of the year nominees. And you look at it, and again, we're just teasing it. We're going to get to it later.
Good tease.
But just some shocking names on there. And I mean shocking that they made the list, but shocking that those players are considered among the top five performers shows you how far the U.S. has to go.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, it's a gulf.
Nick, I was trying not to get depressed on the show today, and I don't know if I want to see those.
Well, you're hanging out with the wrong dude, Ben, because Depression Central Station is where I drive the train.
DCS.
But yeah, so
we are in Buffalo after all.
That is correct, and we haven't mentioned the Bills at all, and we won't.
Yes.
This is where I realized how detached I am from American football. I was listening to some sporting talk on the way over, and I realized, oh, this isn't bumming me out. I'm just used to it. It's I guess it's the same way that you get a lot of comparisons I can't make. Let me put it this way. There are parts of our culture that other cultures don't have, and you wonder, wow, how in the world do they exist without it? It's because they've never had it.
I fell asleep in the third quarter yesterday, the Bills-Eagles game.
I had to jump back as well. I fell asleep after Philadelphia went up and woke up just in time to see Tyrod Taylor's interception streak broken. Just wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
But no, forget that football. Let's talk about some of the other ongoing events in the Premier League. And let's slip to the other side of that equation from today's Leicester 2-1 win over Chelsea. The Blues, Mourinho gone? I mean, is it no?
Not yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Because today was the first time I legitimately thought, if I found out he was fired tomorrow, I wouldn't say it was a rash decision.
I think it's on his personnel now more than anything else. And
sure, but are they trying to get him fired? And we've seen it happen in the NBA.
Yeah, that's definitely possible too. But I think the tactical move that he made to bring on Cesc Fabregas for John Terry was the only reason why Chelsea was competitive in the rest of that game.
He's brilliant.
If he had left that as the status quo, then I don't think anything changes. Maybe Leicester, you know, holds on. It's either 2-0 or 3-0.
Let me be clear. I would take him as the boss of my team right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes of the teams I really enjoy, Fiorentina, Newcastle, Barcelona, even Barcelona, where things are going very well. If you told me I could have Mourinho tomorrow, I would consider it highly. I think he's a genius.
I don't understand how he wears out his welcome after 2 years. It always seems like he has 2 years of glory.
The third year,
for whatever reason, his players turn against him. Maybe somebody else, maybe ownership turns against him.
Media certainly does. They get sick of covering him.
Media is eager to turn against him, I think.
It's an interesting narrative. We hear a lot about it in Buffalo with the Bills and the Sabres. Is it the media polluting the team or the team polluting the media? And that's something that I think is interesting to discuss around teams the size of Chelsea and Manchester United. Now, granted, they had a tough weekend this weekend, and we'll get to that in a moment. But these are gigantic clubs that in an era of not parity, but increasing parity compared to where it was 10 years ago, we now see the English media having to deal with what, say, maybe, she's trying to find the American equivalent, but maybe the San Francisco media, which is like, oh, the 49ers are just going to be good every year. No, the money's spread out now.
Mm-hmm.
Teams can be, is it Anchorman where he goes, girls can do stuff now.
That's Veronica Corning.
Yeah, that's kind of what we've got here. The small clubs can do stuff now, man. Like that's kind of what I'm seeing. And with Watford seventh,
just that's wild.
Just promoted, and that's a team with a great manager.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll hesitate to use the modifier "great" because it's first year in the Premier League,
and also two very good strikers too.
Very good performing strikers, guys who are hitting.
Yeah.
If Hazard, who's, you know, more your second striker.
Or your false nine.
Your false nine, Ben. That's your new name. I need to get you a jersey with false nine on the back.
You guys missed Nick's air quotes.
Yeah. Well, no, I try to emphasize them.
Oh, okay. Audible air quotes.
If Costa is firing, Chelsea's got a bunch more points. I saw their leading scorer. He's their leading scorer in the Premier League. Do you know how many goals he has?
Ooh, I know this. Three?
Three. And he's got the most goals of anyone on Chelsea.
I know. Hazard hasn't scored through 16 games.
Which is shocking. He literally, I was not offended when people wanted him to put him in the discussion with Ronaldo and Messi's seasons last year. Not as an overall player, but is he having the best season? It was worth discussing. He was magic. And it's just not there for him right now.
How funny is it that Loic Remy comes on for, 25, 30 minutes?
Ex-Magpie.
And he pots a goal. And how does that reflect on Diego Costa? You know, Costa so quickly gets in his own head, and it just takes a little bit of a bump or a little bit of an elbow after the play, and then he's just getting angry with someone, you know.
Yeah, of course, Mourinho comes out before the game and says he's absolutely not being sold in January.
No, he's got apparently he has 3 years left on his contract, and those 3 years are going to be honored, according to Mourinho, which I think is absolutely not true.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. If Diego Costa is in Chelsea next year, I think that's a total upset.
I would have to think that there is a different manager there, if that's the case. The bib-tossing thing, as minor as you may have considered it, to me, is something that would not be looked upon at any other team.
I think
if it wasn't
really
Mourinho.
Funny.
It is very funny. But
no, I just
if,
think it's funny they call it a bib.
Because also true.
I just picture a lot of people eating like messy snacks on the sideline.
Well, that's why they wear them.
Yeah.
You didn't want to get anything on the Yokohama logo. Mm-hmm. But if Giroud tosses his bib at Wenger, I think he's you know, that is so disrespectful. But it happens to Mourinho, and the media is like, well, that's what's happening to Jose right about now. Very interesting times. Let's jump to Manchester United, Ben.
Ooh.
What's going on with your beloved Red Devils?
First of all, I wouldn't say they're my beloved Red Devils. They
your
were,
favorite Red Devils.
They were just the team that I used to associate myself
your
with.
Your preferred.
And now I don't really have a team.
Yeah.
And part of that is because I really hate watching Manchester United play this year.
That'll do it.
Oh, it is dreadful. And I don't consider myself a bandwagon player, but it's the same as being a Chicago Bulls fan. It's really easy to find yourself kind of going off the tracks a little bit. You don't identify with a couple players. You don't like a coaching style. And you see that with Louis Van Gaal. He preached patience when he came at the beginning of last year. And we've been patient, you know. Manchester United supporters seen players come in and out, seen defensive midfielders by the boatload come in. And nothing seems better. There's not a whole lot of invention going forward. A lot of the players who've been there for a while, Wayne Rooney being somebody who's clearly in his decline.
He looks cooked. I mean, he doesn't look in his decline. He looks like if that didn't say Rooney on the back, you just wouldn't play him.
Mm-hmm.
He would be coming off the bench.
And giving so much time and so much expectations to a 19-year-old. I like Martial, and I think Martial will be a very good player at some point in
time.
He
does some things. He had that cut through the box late in the game where he kind of bounced it off his own foot, taking it to the left, and fired it over the net, of course. But, yeah, he's... I guess you can't sit him and Depay, right? You can't sit him in Memphis because you've spent so much money on both of them, and they're both having the same growing pains.
And I don't get it. Depay is the same thing that happened with Angel Di Maria.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
That's on Van Gaal.
It's entirely on Van Gaal.
Where's Rudy Popper? Louis Van Gaal.
Angel Di Maria... Very talented player and is having success. You know, he's with PSG now, right?
He's fantastic. It's not a surprise that he's having success.
Yeah, but whatever it is, maybe just the EPL is a different league, and that's not the place where guys like Angel Di Maria and Memphis Depay, guys who are, you know, maybe not the most mentally tough and physically tough players, can survive. And it just seems like Depay is giving himself a little bit too much freedom off the field, and I feel like that's why he wasn't really included. But he hasn't been playing well either.
Well, and I think there's a fair argument to be had. But at the same time, and the mentally tough part is a big difference, players of that ilk are having success other places. Mahrez, not far off in style of play from either of those players.
Mm-hmm.
Hazard last year had that sort of success. I mean, name a team. Kabai is a little more hard-nosed and a little more set back in the formation.
Yeah.
But these players are still having success, so is it a Louis Van Gaal thing? And I can't help but think that's the case. What I do find kind of funny is the extra glorification that this is heaping on Sir Alex Ferguson, because Moyes didn't do it and Van Gaal didn't do it, but he did it. However, those integral pieces did seem to just drop right off the face of the earth after he left. So let me just toss this out there. I don't think there's a chance in hell of it happening. Sir Alex Ferguson into the hot seat for the second half of the season.
Is this Phil Jackson again?
Just to get gigs ready. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you take it as a if you're a United fan?
Oh, obviously, if you're a United fan, you'd absolutely love to see
would
that
you
happen.
Peg them for success?
More success than they're having now, which, you know, it's...
Which is what? Third in the league?
Yeah, but it's...
Fourth in the league, 6 points off the pace.
I think United fans also want to see decent soccer, and they're not they're not seeing that right now. And I know injuries have played a part.
They were missing, outshoot West Ham 21-1.
They were missing nine regulars, too, in this...
That's the game,
against Bournemouth, you know, and... At some point when they're...
Some guy named Borthwick Jackson, and that's just his last name played. Mm-hmm. I had never heard of him before.
I had never
week.
Heard of Varela either.
Yeah. Yeah, they that was bad.
I thought he was Darmian for 20 minutes.
That said, the Cherries.
Oh, I know. You just... Nick so, is beaming now.
Ever since I put that pin on my jacket, they can't stop winning.
I think you put the pin on the jacket after they had their first pick.
Ever since I started putting that pin on the jacket, they still can't stop winning.
And they don't even have their best players. You know, Callum Wilson's out. That Max Allen, Grade L guy is out.
Yep.
They're one of their biggest signings over the window this
summer.
Tyrone
Mings.
Tyrone Mings is out. And
they're playing Artur Baruc in net, and he's not very great.
Their captain, Tommy Elphick, also out.
Yep.
So this is a Bournemouth side that's not even at full strength.
Up the Cherries, Ben. Up them.
Why do you like Bournemouth? So Bournemouth. I shouldn't say Bournemouth.
I like Bournemouth. no, I honestly, it's certainly a personal bias thing. I just, ever since I met Jeff Mostyn, I'm not name dropping. I'm just explaining why.
It sure sounds like a name drop.
Well, I met their chairman,
Did
and he
you
was
meet
super
Eddie Howe
cool.
Too?
If I met Eddie Howe, I would be moving to the South Coast. I love that man. Mm-hmm. I love that
man. Seems like all of Bournemouth loves him, too.
And they should.
That standing O and the just the Eddie Howe chant after that win on Saturday was really... I don't usually get spine tingles too much when I'm watching the EPL, but that was one of those moments where like something really cool is going on here, and I'm not sure what, and I don't know why my spine feels like this.
But it's tingling. But there's a certain magic that's going on. And I mean, as much as magic can happen when you're, that's the thing. That's kind of the glory of the newly promoted side is you feel so great for them right now and realize they're just 2 points ahead of the drop, but they've had literally the best 7 days in the history of their club. I mean, that is something special, not counting getting promoted, of course, but that has to be in the history of the club in order for you to get to this point. David De Gea has to stop that. I'm amazed by how many people, Stanislas gets credit for trying it, but I am just frankly amazed that De Gea is fooled that way because he's just been so good.
Poor De Gea has having to organize that back line of people who no one knows has to be a nightmare. And
you with the hyphenated last name, what's it again?
Yes,
Bournemouth Jackson? No, that's who we're playing. Borthwick. Ah. I've been scored on. Like they're playing outcasts. Dan Gosling couldn't get on the field for Newcastle. He's playing all the time for them. And I just wonder what's the move for them? They're getting all their goals right now from a 26-year-old winger and they are injured. If they are to stay up and they have some new money in the club, it won't be a surprise to see them spend in January. But to be missing a couple of a winger in Gradel,
they're going to get healthier, though. I mean, these guys, I think Elphick will be back in December. I know Mings is out. Callum Wilson's out for the year, too. So
he could come back, I guess, late.
For a couple of weeks, maybe, yeah. Which, and what happened to Christian Atsu? I remember Atsu, the Chelsea loanee, being this heralded addition, the Ghanaian who is going to make a big impact. And he is was loaned out, or just no one knows where
loaned
he is, it seems.
From Chelsea.
Loaned from Chelsea.
Yeah.
But in terms of where he is for Bournemouth, I think he's hurt. But I don't know. I haven't really seen anything too decisive on him. But he was expected to play a pretty major role. And I think sometimes with promoted clubs, when you bring all these different pieces in, just kind of shore up a side that, you know, won in the championship but needed more of an oomph to compete in the Premier League, that you do make a lot of signings that don't necessarily work out because some of them you don't have a huge budget. Some players you're taking chances on. And with Bournemouth, it's still they've made enough smart decisions to make this interesting. And guys like Joshua King, who I had never heard of before this year. No
oddly
idea.
Enough, yeah, and it was shocking to me on a day that Chicharito gets a hat trick and everyone's talking about that. Joshua King scores and you hear, oh, he's from Manchester United. Like the announcer heaping it on. From Manchester United's youth academy and didn't cut the mustard. It wasn't like United was like, oh, this kid's crazy talented, but I choose Bebe. No, that's not what happened. But I did find that interesting. Yeah, Atsu is with Bournemouth right now. I just looked it up on the old Googles. and there's nothing to be said about what he's doing. These players, and that'll be a conversation topic for the dry days of summer, but these players who go to Chelsea, right? He signed from Porto in 2013, as I guess that makes him 21 years old, and this is his third straight season on loan to another team. There's just something that isn't fun about that.
No,
Chelsea has something like 35 players on loan right now. That's problematic.
But you can say you were Chelsea property for a long time, and that makes really good stories to like tell your kids and to brag about and put on your resume.
It is
like that.
Very, very interesting.
That's why I like that loan thing. You know, you can go play elsewhere, and you're like, you know, I'm still Chelsea property.
Right.
And people just think about you much higher. Like, you're the one who's signing autographs, even though you're, like, not playing, probably.
Well, it's interesting. So a little insider info here.
Ooh.
You know, we see it in college soccer, and even English college soccer. We had been speaking with a potential player, so to speak, who had come from one of the biggest clubs in England and was there right up until he was 18, didn't sign a professional deal. And in following his story, the question is, do you bring a guy over? Do you give him a housing spot, right? Taking it away from an American kid. He's got a great highlight video, and he comes from Club X. You can't guarantee that he's better, but there's some sort of allure to these major programs from overseas. And so it's just very interesting to see that around the world people have to make that call. Right.
Yeah, it's the mystery. It's the finding a gem where and sort of it you can relate it to how Stu Riddle at UB does it, because obviously he brings over a lot of New Zealand players who are highly touted, and really all we have to work from are highlight videos, you know.
Right.
And I know Coach Riddle or Stu Riddle knows what those kind of players are like, but we don't, you know. And there are some very, very talented
Sure.
guys, but you see videos and you don't really know, you know, and not all of them
and
can
what's
make
their
the
attitude
league,
like, you know?
Yeah. And how are they going to fit in America? Like, you think transitions from high school soccer to college soccer is big. Well, try moving to a new country and meeting all these new people in a place that's a little bit colder than you've been and dealing with it.
And I know it, before we go to break here, speaking of the UB program in general, I know over the last month that Stu Riddle has been out of the country twice scouting. Even if you're seeing him in person, you're making the call on a two-day combine of them playing against their peers in a place that they're comfortable, and arguably NFL combine style have been prepared for exactly what they should do, as opposed to you almost wish we could have I'm volunteering for Buffalo to host it, a foreign player combine for all Division I schools in Buffalo at Front Park tomorrow.
Ooh, is it going to be nice enough tomorrow, weather-wise?
I don't know, but
Front
Park is glorious.
It is, yeah. Probably. It's really well manicured, without a doubt.
We'll be back in a few minutes here on WBNY. And we're back. I can't say we've completely left the Premier League behind here on the Football Club of Buffalo show. Almost forgot the title, Ben. What kind of branding is that?
That's a good question.
Kind of wizard branding wizardry is that? He's Ben Tsujimoto from the Buffalo News soccer blog. That's soccer.buffalonews.com.
That is. You're really on a roll. You've gotten that 3 weeks in a row.
Just killing it.
Just forgot the name this time, huh?
Yeah. And I'm and I'm Nick Mendola from NBC Sports Soccer, FC Buffalo. And other stuff involving soccer. We have the All-Western New York High School dinner coming up tomorrow night at Classics 5. Came this close to snaring injured Syracuse forward Liam Callahan after a crazy College Cup weekend to come speak at the banquet, but injuries and final exams will cause a little bit of a problem there.
He broke his third metatarsal.
That's just
in that semifinal against Clemson.
He was arguably the best player on the field when he came off. Syracuse dominated that game. We got to get to the U.S. men's national team in a minute because, but Syracuse, to me, of the four semifinalists, was the best team playing in those two games. Now, the way Stanford looked in the final, no one was beating them, and so simple as that. But Syracuse dominated Clemson, if not for Andrew Tarbell, who was, by the way, NPSL. Alum.
Really?
Two MPSL alums on Clemson. Michael Melvin and Andrew Tarbell. Tarbell from the New Orleans Jesters.
Oh, the Jesters. I remember.
Played with
the
Patrick
Jesters.
Mullen, so that was one heck of a team.
I bet.
Oof. And Michael Melvin played for Jacksonville United. I may be screwing up his first name, but he's definitely a Melvin.
Terrific. That's cool to see that kind of NPSL connection in the College Cup. I wish I would have been able to see all of that Akron-Stanford match, the one that went to how many rounds of PKs, like 13 or 14? 13?
Yeah, that was a hard one to watch because you know kids' lives are just being extinguished. Richie Larea not shooting was weird.
Mm-hmm. And Nate Schultz, the guy who plays for AFC Cleveland, missing the last PK. I'm sure you probably grinned a little bit when you saw that, but...
I actually, you know, I like Adam Najum from Akron.
Yes.
But I had to laugh because I don't know if you heard about the UB hullabaloo. So after the, would have been the quarterfinal, Akron defeats somebody in overtime. I can't remember who it is.
Yeah, was it Creighton?
Yes, on a Najum free kick.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Big old Jared Embrick pops onto the microphone and makes a comment like, yeah, and kid from Buffalo was player of the year. Like, clearly it's clearly it's in your head, buddy.
Yep.
But I thought that was a little classless, and I was rooting hard against Akron, even with Azana. He got a lot of PT in that game, though. He played very well, very rambunctious, and I thought he was one of the players threatening to make a difference late in that game for the Zips. But the kid who missed, and it might have been Najum. No, somebody missed a chance to win it. For Akron, Stanford had missed, and here we go. We just got to win it. Oh, I've hit the post, and you could see him turn to celebrate when he realized it ricocheted outward.
Oh no, it's like the swaggy P, the Nick Young.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a great GIF of him online of him taking a three, seeing the ball roll around the rim, looks like it's going in, and he turns around thinking it's going in. He starts to celebrate in only swaggy P fashion.
Yeah,
and it rims out.
He wore the Yeezy shoes this weekend. I don't know if you saw that.
Did he really?
He wore the Yeezy.
Announces
a deal with Adidas. But anyway, that's basketball. This is soccer.
I like to tie this stuff all together.
Just tie it up in a nice bow. Over, under, and around the tree, Ben. I was nonplussed by the Akron-Stanford game. I thought it was missing a lot.
There were no goals in 220 minutes of College Cup semifinal action.
But at least in the Syracuse game, there was excitement. Tarbell made some fantastic saves. Boucher's a fantastic player as well for Syracuse. I feel for them. I thought Coach McIntyre's team was a better team. I thought they were the best team, and they would have presented a problem for Stanford that Clemson clearly didn't. That was a bloodbath.
I didn't think Clemson was really that strong, and I think they were playing beyond their means, and I think that
they were strong the first half of the year.
Yeah.
But they were kind of living off that rep and maybe getting some fortunate bounces in the tournament.
But I think it showed in the final. I mean, Stanford is obviously a class team. You look down their roster and where those players have come from. I'd say about 80% of them are from MLS academies, and some of the other ones are from the Real SoCal Academy. These are loaded.
A lot of U.S. youth national teamers on that team. I believe it was UCLA and Stanford between them, I think, had 11 U-17 or U-18 nationals come in as freshmen this year. And that's bonkers.
It is. And Jordan Morris gets all the headlines because he scored the first two goals, but...
He finally looked very good in that game.
Baird and Verso and Brandon Vincent, and there's a lot of talent on that team, and it's not just the Jordan Morris show. And I think the casual soccer fan who's looking at it, it's like, oh, Jordan Morris scored another two goals. He scored 13 goals this year in 18 games. He is far and away the best player. He must be the one who's carrying Stanford. And I think that's a disservice to what the Stanford program is doing, because it is deep, it is talented, and they deserve this national championship, and it wasn't just because of Jordan.
But there's also been a problem in the, and I don't mean a problem in like this is a real issue, but there's a problem with the way we watch college soccer, very much like Jack Eichel last year, the way we don't watch college hockey, which is someone looks at Jordan Morris's numbers if they haven't paid any attention to college soccer and thinks, wow, he had a great year. But guys score 15, 16, 17 goals, I don't want to say on the regular, but five or six guys a year do it.
Yeah.
So if you don't have that sort of measurement to make, then you're not going to be able to put that down.
That's why a lot of these all-star teams that you see come out, a lot of people who cover those teams individually don't agree with it.
Right.
And the people voting on those teams, in most cases, the coaches, and some, I'd say in almost every case, it's the coaches, you know, just don't see enough of the games to be like, oh, I'm going to vote for this guy because I've seen him play 8 times or nine times. They've seen him once or twice against their own team.
There's a microcosm of that in, believe it or not, Western New York high school soccer.
Oh.
I was looking at, I actually had to make a call today, making the program for the All-Western New York banquet. And there was a girl who was all New York State, but not even honorable mention in All-Western New York. But the fact of the matter is there are voters at the state tournament, and she was phenomenal. So how does that happen? And, you know, I had to email, like, hey, is this a typo? I don't want to leave a girl's name out of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Kids at that age pretty much take offense to that.
Yeah.
And the story was she wasn't even nominated for All-Western New York, but at the state tournament she was so good that she, I mean, who knows, maybe she earns herself a scholarship, which goes back to the college dynamic, to the Premier League. The National Premier Soccer League. You can see a guy play once or twice, and maybe he's had the two worst games of their career. Maybe he's playing on a bum ankle. Maybe his girlfriend just broke up with him. Pointing out Stu Riddle or any college coach, as we mentioned, over watching kids in England and Germany right now who might have that kind of that one-off clutch gene. Like, if I have a good weekend here, I can go to college for free.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're at college, college becomes the priority. I remember speaking to a former FC Buffalo player, and they told me the biggest problem they had with their college team. I'll tell you off the air, not on the air. No. The biggest problem they had with their college team was that so many, he was there to try and get a pro career out of it, to go to the next level. But 75% of the kids there are going to spend more time in study hall than doing extra drills on the field, a la Cristiano Ronaldo. So that's a major challenge, for let alone the partying. That doesn't happen in college, though.
See, at the same time, and to counter the point that we just made, you know, you can only have so many eyes in so many places, you know? So it's not like you're suddenly going to have an extra 10 scouts or an extra 10 hours in a day to go see other people play. You know, it just doesn't work that way yet. And maybe as soccer continues to grow and there's more of an interest and there's more money available, then maybe fewer players slip between the cracks, and players who deserve to get either, whether they're postseason honors or whether it's maybe an extra combine. And you see more and more combines popping up now. And I think that's a great thing, because I think exposure in this respect will only make the U.S. better as a soccer-playing nation. And I don't think there's a whole lot of opportunities. That's why you still see people creating highlight videos. You know, there's basically any college prospect who's has any aspirations at all will create a highlight video because they know that...
With the same song.
Is it still EDM of some type?
Yep.
Yeah, still EDM. Okay.
Yeah, that really... It makes it more fluid.
Taking this back to EPL really fast... I wrote something today previewing the Leicester and Chelsea match, and Willian, there's a highlight video of Willian's set pieces on the internet to just a very great soft pop song. And it felt weird for the first, like, 45 seconds listening to it. It's like, I feel like there should be something more dramatic.
But after a while, you realize it fits his personality.
It was. It was just so, you know, just rhythmic and so soft and just, oh, it's great.
I'm going to make one for whoever has the best season for FC Buffalo to, like, Careless Whisper or Easy Lover.
Watch out, Kevin Capic.
Yeah, well, let's see, right? So I wanted to get into this with you. I am hanging out, and I see this pop up on my screen. United States men's national team. Top 5 players. Did you look at who these guys are?
No, okay. You will be surprising me with these.
I will surprise you after you tell me. I'm going to tell you that 5 U.S. men's national team players are up for the U.S. Soccer Male Player of the Year. Mm. Let's see how many you can. How many do you think you can get, by the way?
How many do I think I can get?
Out of 5.
Out of 5. I bet you I can get 3.
All right. Go for it.
All right. I will say...
I bet I can get 5.
Michael Bradley.
Correct.
You can get 5 because you're looking at the list.
Yeah, I already wrote an article on it today.
Alejandro Bedoya.
That is incorrect.
Oh.
He was last year.
Oh, bummer. Jermaine Jones.
Also a no.
Good. He doesn't deserve it.
There you go.
Jozy Altidore.
Also incorrect.
Wow. So this is good then, right?
No. Or
maybe not. Okay.
No.
Tim Howard. Can I get Tim Howard in there?
You can't get Tim Howard in there, and that's because he wasn't the number one keeper for the U.S., so I think that played into it.
Yeah, I suppose so.
The only player on the Male Player of the Year nominees, for better or for worse, that has won already is Clint Dempsey.
Okay.
Who has won the award 3 times. Remember, even though he's been disappointing largely, mm-hmm. he had a tremendous Gold Cup. Scored a lot of goals.
Ooh, that's true.
A lot of goals. Brad Guzan, because apparently your goalie has to make the list.
All right.
I have no other explanation for that. Nothing against him.
I think Tim Howard had a better year than Brad Guzan.
Oh, for sure. I think a lot of this is heavily weighted on how they do in the striped shirt. Michael Bradley.
Yes. I finally got
one. The award, inexplicably.
Yeah. Well, I got one at least.
DeAndre Yedlin.
That's ridiculous.
Yep.
That makes me angry.
And Fabian Johnson.
Okay, I don't mind. I don't mind Fabian.
Fabian Johnson is arguably the best U.S. player going right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's for both club and country.
Having a delightful time at Gladbach. Oh, I've got to switch
mics. Oh, switching mics. All right.
Oh, boy.
Please hold for a second.
We have
Nick
a technological boo-boo going on right now.
You keep talking,
just
Ben.
His positioning. Yes, I am still talking. So I don't understand why DeAndre Yedlin is on there, first of all. He's gotten a little bit better for Sunderland, but it doesn't matter if we're just talking about the Stars and Stripes. And we don't know if he's a winger. We don't know if he's a defender. We don't actually know if he's
good
at soccer. I know.
I think he has to be a winger. Is that better now? Yes?
Good now.
Okay. I think he has to be a winger, unless you're playing a traditional 4-4-2. I think he can play more of a right midfield role, unless you're counting that as under the winger position. I don't. I think of winger as more that 4-3-3 position. For me, it is brutal if Guzan and Yedlin are on there. Not because they're not good players, but it shows us just how far we have to go. That a player of the year nominee in Yedlin was at the University of Akron, arguably unheralded, 4 years ago.
Why isn't Bobby Wood on there? I think Bobby Wood is a pretty big snub. He's had a very good year. What else can you ask of this guy? He comes on and he scores.
Yeah.
And he's been doing it consistently.
Surprising not to see Zardes on there.
Agreed.
And also, arguably their best defender in Jeff Cameron.
Yes.
Who didn't play this summer out of choice because Stoke expected him to heal from injury rather than taxing himself in the Gold Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand Dempsey being on there. I think Bradley's still the best player on the team. Johnson's having the best year. So those three players, I understand. Guzan and Yedlin, I don't. And I feel like that's almost a bit of a bow to the Premier League, so to speak. You're the two players over there, along with Jeff Cameron and Tim Howard, who didn't play for us this summer. So here. Not to the Premier League, but to the Premier League consciousness amongst fans. That's a little troubling to me. Now, that said, aside from Bedoya, who I love, are there names that just leap out to you as missing? And that's kind of the problem. And that's what I want to point out. With Yedlin's resume, with Guzan's relative lack of resume, I think we're much further away than we think. And I think the United States has overachieved in recent years.
I think I'm a realist, and I think we are still very far away.
Oh, we're very far away.
We're very far away.
There's no doubt about it.
And the fact that we, even against nations that we used to just be crushing, now we find ourselves playing a very conservative, not possession-oriented, basically everything that Jurgen Klinsmann prioritized and promised when he took over the job, this kind of style that we're playing is exactly the opposite of what we're seeing.
Right.
And that's not good, you know. And the only reason why we made the run that we did in the World Cup, granted, played out of our minds against Ghana, but it was all conservative counterattack, try to get lucky, but absorb pressure from these like easily better nations.
Yep,
it's infuriating, and I think we should be much further along. And I think maybe that time is still to come. But I don't want to turn this into a Jurgen Klinsmann discussion. But
well, I mean,
it's hard to avoid, unfortunately.
I'm going to get a lot of flack for this. But again, I don't think the talent is there yet. Mm-hmm. I think there are players who could grow into the roles. Miazga is promising. But even a guy like Matt Beisler, who I've very much liked, had a strong World Cup.
Has regressed
badly. Yeah. He's trying to shoehorn Ventura Alvarado in there, who's now without contract. He's arguably going to be transfer listed, excuse me.
To butt in, Orozco and Ventura Alvarado, I will be happy if those guys never play
don't
another
need to
minute
see him
for
again.
The U.S.
At least with Orozco, he's being played out of position. You mm-hmm. can't say that for Alvarado.
Mm-hmm.
Diskerud has taken an incredible step back.
Yeah.
He looked like the heir apparent to Landon Donovan for a little bit. I mean, not that it was showing up in spades, but he looked very, very good. Beckerman's not going to be around very much longer. Jermaine Jones is, as long as Klinsmann, Jermaine Jones is going to be playing when he's 60 if Jurgen Klinsmann has his way. He'll be playing in the BDSL with Rangers, and Klinsmann will still be calling him up. That's how it's going to work. Nagby, I think, has to be in that next group. Not that you would nominate him for Player of the Year. But again, I'm just going to read through these names. Who else is going to be on the list? Beasley, John Brooks, Omar Gonzalez. There aren't too many crazy omissions. Graham Zeus, he's not even a regular call-up anymore.
What do you think happened to Mix Diskerud? And that, I think that's an interesting topic, because if you think about Jurgen Klinsmann as a guy who gives his players a decent amount of freedom in how they want to play, and I'm not sure how much that's true, but I have heard that said of Klinsmann a few times, that should fit Diskerud very well, and especially when you have a team with supposedly very good holding midfielders in Jermaine Jones and maybe Bradley to an extent, because he's absolutely capable of playing there. That should free up a guy like Diskerud to use his creativity, take advantage of that space, not worry too much about defensive responsibilities, but worry about either getting the ball to Bedoya or Fabian Johnson on the wings, Zardes, keeping them involved, or taking advantage of somebody like Bobby Wood or Altidore or Johansson up front.
Well, Johansson hasn't been around, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to see the States with him in full stride. Here's what I'll tell you, I think, and I hate saying this because I very much like MLS. I think Diskerud's another player whose performance has dropped off since he came back and played domestically.
Yeah.
Bradley's in that mix. Even Maurice Edu, who wasn't getting a lot of time on the national team, looks like a shell of himself. Breck Shea may be the only one you can look at and say his profile's grown, and that's because he wasn't playing overseas. MLS has not been good to players who started or who had come back. It's been good to players who have gone over there, and it's been good players who have stayed here, but for whatever reason, I mean, who's come back and really starred? Donovan from loan at Everton. Bradley has been decent, but his national team form has dropped off.
I guess Dempsey too.
Dempsey, sure, but on a relative scale, Dempsey had the best European career of any American. Mm-hmm. He was coming from being one of the best players in the world, from being sold from Fulham to Tottenham for crazy jack. Mm-hmm. So again, on a relative scale, he's dropped off as well. I don't have the answer for you.
I don't think there is an answer. But at the same time, I think it's so difficult because we need players playing overseas. And I think that's basically what the conclusion to this conversation is.
Yes.
We need players playing in the EPL.
But playing.
Playing, exactly. Yeah. With the emphasis on playing, not just on teams in the EPL, but playing. And it's very difficult because U.S. soccer is just behind there right now.
It won't get quite to that level in our lifetimes, maybe just because of the history, but with the money that's being invested in U.S. soccer, Ben, don't you think it will be a more realistic option for players to be in the United States when the teams are better?
Eventually,
we saw more money invested just this week, the announcement from Don Garber that they're going to be allocating more money towards the middle of the rosters. They're allowing teams to spend more. And I reference this every week, but at BlazerCon, we did hear that. We heard Garber, the owners, on a panel of three owners say, what's the number one thing the league needs? And these are men who are emptying their pocketbooks to pay players. And in every other sport, what do we see? Keep salaries down. They're asking MLS to allow them to spend more money. So that says something about what, Jonathan Kraft at New England and Adrian Heath? No, that's their coach. But Orlando's owner, Phil Rawlings, wants to see. They want to see more money in the game. And that's very interesting to me.
I'm looking up and down this U.S. roster, and it's not like we have players that are knocking on the door to go to Europe, And I think a couple of the guys you mentioned, the only reason they're attractive to Europe is because they're young and they have untapped potential. I still think that's Nagby. I think that's Matt Miazga.
Yeah, and they also need, remember, to be in the team, except for special exceptions, as we've seen with Juan Agudelo, they need to be in 75% of their team's last X amount of fixtures. I don't remember the number. And that is not even the case for some of these players. I mean, maybe Alvarado is in that fray. Morris, I would think, is a special exception.
I was going to say that was going to be the segue that I wanted to take back to Jordan Morris.
That's the perfect discussion.
Because what do you do with Jordan Morris? He's not going to return to college.
I send him to Europe.
To England, preferably.
I think to England or Germany. Depending on if he has any sort of semblance of the language or if he's just only heard Klinsmann swearing at him. But, to me, he goes to Seattle and they offer him the highest homegrown contract in history. Is that, can he find, it's obviously not about money with him or he wouldn't have went back to Stanford, right?
Yeah.
So to me, I think it's easy for him to turn that down. You can always come back here. There will always be room for a Jordan Morris. The way there's room for a Breck Shea, room for a Maury Isidu. You can fail over there and come back. You can't, not that we're expecting him to fail, but you can't fail here and then be like, all right, now I'll try Europe.
Do you think there's a benefit to Morris playing with Seattle for a year and then going overseas? Or do you think it's imperative that he goes overseas? Because I feel like he almost is in some ways indebted to play for Seattle because they've invested a lot in him. They were the first team to show interest. They've thrown a ton of money at him. And maybe European clubs are a little, I mean, they would like to see him perform on the MLS stage just for a year or maybe for 6 months. I don't know how long it is.
You're right. It would be interesting to see him sign a deal that basically, all right, I'm going to get paid. I'm going to let Seattle people buy jerseys with Morris on the back and call me an ex-Seattle player. Mm-hmm. But come August, when the transfer window opens, I'm going over. That would be interesting. I just think his star could get brighter, could shine brighter by performance. It could also never, or not never, he could also never have a better chance to go to England or Europe or anywhere than he does right now. And I want him to seize that opportunity. Remember, he was cut from the U23 team before Klinsmann called him up. He is a prospect because Klinsmann called him up. Mm-hmm. So he also owes Klinsmann's vision a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And to go back to the Seattle point, that's one of the reasons that in Europe, your academy team growing up is going to get a sell-on fee every time you're sold. That's being fought in the courts right now for the United States. So Seattle would be worried a lot less about signing him if they knew they were going to make money off of him wherever he went.
True.
So I wouldn't mind seeing him go to a championship team even, not even a Premier League team.
I agree with that.
And just go out there and learn to get the snot beat out of you.
I think there's some real trepidation in fans and soccer fans, obviously, in considering Jordan Morris to be the next big U.S. men's national team player. I think maybe it's because we've just had a lot of false hope in players in the past that we're like anointing them to be the next U.S. national team star. And I mean, I'll see some media sites being like Jordan Morris is going to be the next great or the first great, I guess, American goal scorer or the last since Brian McBride. But
yeah, let's not sleep on Brian McBride.
But I don't see the hype out there around Jordan Morris. You know, I see in that he's young, he's in college, and he's playing for the men's national team. And that's a cool story. But I don't see people just jumping on this guy as going to be the next American star.
I think that goes back to the diminished player pool. It goes back to the point about the five players who are up for the U.S. Male Player of the Year. Because a guy like Morris, you start to realize he is no different. An 18-year-old, 19-year-old player breaking into the fold for Germany, breaking into the fold for Poland, or even in Austria. Not that these are, I'm just staying in the same geographic region, Ben. That is a lot different than we're realizing. It's a lot closer to an 18-year-old breaking into the fold for Jamaica. I mean, the U.S. is higher profile because the money here and the foreign eyes that pay attention to our country and what we're doing because of Beckham and because of Giovinco and because of Roy Keane, Robbie Keane. It's interesting to me when you consider that some of these players are breaking through the national team because the quality isn't there. Because if you're, now granted, he's also calling up Alan Gordon, mm-hmm. which
makes me shake my head every time.
It's unreal. Yeah. I mean, it's unreal. Hey, we got to go. It was a quick show.
It was.
No
yeah.
guesting. We just flew talking about the old soccer ball. Mm. Just yeah. kick that soccer ball.
It's been fun, Nick.
Yeah. How's your co-ed team doing?
Co-ed team, we're in the finals on Wednesday, so that's pretty exciting.
Les Sugimotos?
Yes, Les Sugimotos, which means the Sugimotos in French.
Yes.
Yes.
Hey, or it's whatever. I got to go.
Or okay, it's a great team name.
It is WBNY 91.3. This is the Football Club of Buffalo show. I'm Nick Mandola. He's Ben Sugimoto. We'll be back next Monday with so much more fun. You won't be able to contain yourself, so, you know, prepare yourself physically, emotionally, mentally.
Oh, boy.
Here on WBNY.